good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program. This hour, this first hour tonight, is sponsored by John Zweig. Thank you, John. Several times John has sponsored an hour of the program. Thanks a lot, John. We appreciate it very, very much. The word tonight is worry. Are you worried? Worry. Are you worried about what the Republicans are doing where it concerns cutting social programs? What happened, a key House subcommittee or committee today voted to cut not the military budget. The military budget is scheduled for a cut in their the money that they suck out of this country. Not the military, but the military-industrial complex. You know, soldiers get very little of this. This is for the big defense contractors who have built the biggest scam in the history of the human race and continue to do so because nobody in Congress has the guts to say to the military-industrial complex, you've had enough, that's it. And least of all, Republicans. Republicans would no more try to rein in the military than they would cut off their own ding-dongs. They just would not do it. So moving to protect the military from those budget cuts next year, because the remember that super committee last year? The Pentagon is supposed to get a 10%, $55 billion automatic budget cut in January because that super committee couldn't reach a deal. Well, the Republicans, of course, even though they signed off on the agreement that if the super committee didn't reach a deal, which they didn't, then the Pentagon, along with other spending, would get automatic cuts. Well, the Republicans, being the swine and the liars that they are, have decided to renege on their deal and try to figure out a way to keep the money going down the rat hole of the murder hole of that has been so carefully dug by the military-industrial complex in this country. Now, by murder hole, I mean all the programs, all the social programs, all the wonderful things could be done in this country is being murdered by the military-industrial complex. Eisenhower warned against this. Most people with a shred of common sense left will understand the asininity, the stupidity of the United States spending more on weaponry than the rest of the world combined. I'm pretty sure that's, rest of the world combined. And we still continue to get our asses kicked. Right? I mean, show me a war we've won. Go ahead. Show me a war we've won since World War II. Grenada doesn't count. Yeah, well, there you go. Korea, we didn't win that one. That one is still in effect. We just have an armistice. Vietnam, don't go there. Cambodia, Laos, anybody? Iraq, Afghanistan? Hello? No? Okay. Moving on. The measure the Republicans have come up with now will cause a lot of worry, that's a key word tonight, because it will require federal employees to contribute more to their own pensions. Undocumented immigrants would be denied tax refunds from the $1,000 per child tax credit. Now, keep in mind that this proposal doesn't stand an ice cube's chance in hell of becoming law. This is just what Republicans do. They cannot operate in the real world, so they create this fantasy world and come up with this kind of garbage because, well, you know, it's an election year. And this vote by this committee in Congress is no more than a symbolic swipe at Obama. Now, the cuts approved in the budget committee, total more than $300 billion over the coming decade. Now, this is not to be confused with the Paul Ryan budget. No, that's another electioneer bunch of hog snot put out there by this truly, truly sociopathic Paul Ryan. No, this is something different. This is different. The Ryan budget plan passed the House in March, of course. One-fourth of the House Republican spending cuts come from programs directly benefiting the poor, like Medicaid, food stamps, social services, block grant, child tax credit. The automatic spending cuts, known as a sequester, would strike domestic benefit programs as well, including a 2 percentage point cut for Medicare payments to health care providers, $16 billion cut to farm subsidies. The Republican measure would leave those cuts in place. Now, the worry part comes in. This is a likely sample of what's in store next year for the United States if this half-witted Mormon Mitt Romney wins and the Republicans take back the Senate. Wouldn't that see, talk about parallel reality, right? Romney says he'll get much tougher cuts to domestic programs and an even bigger boost to the Pentagon's budget. Think of that. The Republican measure would more strictly enforce the requirement that most food stamp beneficiaries have assets of $2,000 or less. So if you are getting food stamps and you have $2,020 equity in your poor house, no, it's not underwater. You've got $2,000 and $2,020 in equity. The Republicans would take away your food stamps. It doesn't make any difference that you're unemployed. Your unemployment has run out. Thanks, Republicans. Just about every form of aid, the children's health insurance program in your state is bankrupt. Medicaid is practically bankrupt. So now they will take food out of your children's and your mouths. Well, of course, these are Republicans, of course. Of course. The Budget Committee Chairman Paul Ryan said, quote, "We propose to stop fraud in the food stamp program by ensuring that individuals are actually eligible." Oh, my God. Now, Democrats, of course, say the Republicans are unfairly targeting the poor and vulnerable. The Democrats continue to believe that the way to solve some of these problems would be to include tax increases that strike wealthier people, and also to get rid of the Bush tax cuts for the wealthy. You know, let's take it back up to take it back up to Reagan, the Reagan era. The upper limit tax, marginal tax rate. No, don't want to do that. The top budget panel Democrat, Chris Van Hollen, Maryland, said the food aid cuts would mean 280,000 children would lose free school lunches, and 1.8 million people would lose food stamp benefits, while large agricultural businesses, you know, the mega agricultural filth holes that provide the garbage that passes as American food, they will continue to receive their subsidies. The children... screw the children. The only children Republicans are interested in are the made-up children, the ones that are, a handful of little cells floating around in some viscous material. Those are the only children they care about. So, almost 2 million people would lose food stamps. Large agricultural businesses would continue to receive their lucrative subsidies. Oh, and then don't forget the 280,000 children. You know, those children that Republicans claim they're so interested in protecting. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Chair warriors often fail. We've been poisoned by go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
Anyone past the hour. Fear! Fear! That's the operative word tonight. Fear. Huh? Are you afraid? No? Not afraid? The Republicans, of course, are just damn determined to destroy the country. And part of it is this new budget. It's not even a real budget. It's just something that these swine have passed. It's a symbolic vote. Doesn't mean anything. But it, once again, it shows where Republican legislators, all these millionaires that squat in the People's House, are incapable of governing. Just totally incapable. I mean, this just keeps going on. Anyway, the Republican plan that will never become law repeals a 2009 benefits boost where it concerns food stamps that was put into effect under Obama's economic stimulus measure. And that boost currently awards an additional $13.50 a week to a family of four. And the Republicans want to take that away too. Van Hollen, the Democrat from Maryland, is he from Maryland? I don't know. I've got it here someplace. Really doesn't matter. Anyway, the Democrat said taxpayers deserve better. Or no, I'm sorry, that's Ryan. Van Hollen said this plan hits the food and nutrition programs, but totally exempts all the agricultural subsidies. Of course. And those are not family farmers. I don't care what these lying, filthy Republicans say. Those are not family farmers. Those are the big mega things. Those great big mega agra things. Now, given all this, guess who stepped into the debate? Well, of course, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. They forcefully oppose cuts to programs that help the poor and vulnerable. And they single out the cuts to food stamps as, quote, unjustified and wrong, end quote. And they also go after the effort to deny the child tax credit to undocumented workers because it puts vulnerable children into poverty. But Republicans don't care about that. Catholic bishops, the difference between you and Republicans, both of you, both the groups, care about fetuses and collections of cells. And granted, no, I'm not going to talk about child rape. Granted, the church has an official position, at least the American church, on the welfare of children. The Republicans don't. Republicans like their fetuses the same way they like their soldiers. Dead. Because once a fetus is born, uh-oh, then what? Once a soldier returns alive, wounded or not, uh-oh, then what? So Republicans appreciate death. Across the board, they like things that are short-lived and will die quickly. Fetuses, infants, especially minority infants, soldiers. Because if they stay alive, they are just a complete irritation to Republicans, to right-wingers. Now, what about the right-wing Catholics? Well, there is a conflict there. I said the U.S. Conference of Bishops. I cannot see Fat Tony Scalia or Sammy the Fish Alito or Uncle Clarence, these three members of the Supreme Court, three of the five Catholics, really giving a tinker's damn about children. They don't care. They don't care. Republicans also would eliminate social services block grants. That's a $1.7 billion a year program that gives states money for meals on wheels. Goodbye, old people. Go die. This is what the Republicans want you to do. Die. Remember when they brought up death panels? Hardy, har, har, har. Remember that? Republicans want dead children, dead soldiers, dead old people, dead everything. Meals on Wheels, cut. Daycare, cut. Adoption assistance, see? Adoption assistance, gutted. They're only interested in clusters of cells and zygotes and fetuses. Live children? Yeah, get out of town! Adoption assistance, cut. Transportation help for the elderly and disabled, cut. Wow, really? And then Paul Ryan said, quote, taxpayers deserve better than to see their money wasted. Uh-huh. Okay. So, the word tonight is, what's the word? I forgot the word. We'll be back after the break. Before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by John Zweig. Thanks, John. Mucho gracias. About a week or so ago, it was published, I think at Common Dreams, that on April 17th, as millions of Americans were filing their income tax returns, the highly respected Stockholm International Peace Research Institute, SIPRI, SIPRI, released its latest study on world military spending. And in case you were wondering where most of your tax money and the tax money of other nations went in 2011, the answer from SIPRI was very clear. Your money went for war and preparations for war. This is great, huh? Remember, hey, you right-wingers, hey, you Christians, what did Jesus say about blessed are the peace? Oh, never mind, never mind. World military spending in 2011 reached a record $1,738,000,000,000, an increase of $138 billion over the previous year. And the United States accounted for 41% of that. Now consider all the nations on Earth. I guess I misspoke. If we contribute 41%, that's what we know about. Add another 9.1% and you hit the 50.1%, which is what I said it was, that the United States spends more on war and preparation for war than all other nations combined. So I'll stay with that. The question is asked, why are military expenditures continuing to increase? You know, given all this austerity horse crap that's been batted around since 2008? Oh, austerity! Let's cut food stamps! Let's cut child nutrition programs! Let's cut Pell Grants! Let's cut that! But the military spending keeps going up! Let's cut education, healthcare, housing, parks! Everything! As Lawrence Whitner wrote, Americans particularly might seek to understand why, in this context, U.S. military spending has not been significantly decreased instead of being raised by billions. Okay, military expenditures by China and Russia increased in 2011, too. But even so, their military strength hardly compares to that of the United by God states. The U.S. spends about five times as much as China, that's the world's number two military power, 10 times as much as Russia, the world's number three military power. Furthermore, when U.S. allies like Britain, France, Germany, and Japan are factored in, it is clear that the vast bulk of world military expenditures are made by the United States and its military allies. So, what's the deal here? Defenders of military expenditures reply that military force actually protects people from war. The best way to prevent war is to prepare for it to the exclusion of social welfare programs. Keep that in mind. That's the way it works. You don't want war? Build weapons of mass destruction. Just ask the North Koreans. Ask Saddam Hussein. You don't want war? Make sure that you have every goddamn dollar you can take away from everything else and put it into weapons production, weapons research, biochemical weapons, nuclear weapons, psychological weapons, torture camps, What is the explanation for the fact that the United States is currently engaged in at least two wars and appears to be on the verge of a third with Iran? Perhaps, maybe, could it be? Is it possible that the maintenance of a vast military machine does not prevent war, but instead encourages it? No! Couldn't be! So, could you say and maintain your basis in logic that military, huge military establishments themselves can be quite counterproductive? Yeah? But we don't think about that here. As a matter of fact, if we even question it, let someone question the $750 billion that we know is spent in this country on war and preparation for war. Don't be so naive as to think that there's not another $250 billion or $500 billion that are in the so-called black or invisible budgets. But if you question any of this, whether you are a politician or, and 99.9% of politicians do not, are you kidding? They don't want to be defeated the next time they're up for re-election. Congressman Jones hates America, wants to see it fall to its enemies. Right? This is what the right wing, this is how they, that's how they do it. That's how they keep everybody in line. You're a traitor. Well, what'd I do? I was in the military. No, you're a traitor. I was in combat. You're a traitor. Why? I was wounded. I have Purple Hearts. I have Silver Stars. What? You're not voting for more money for war and death. Oh. The new study by CIPRI shows the fact that this past year, 2011, nations, plural, spent more money on the military, and we are certainly in that group, than at any time previously in human history. That's a hell of a way to run the world, right? Lawrence Whitner, by the way, who provided most of the information here, is a professor of history emeritus at State University of New York in Albany. His latest book is Working for Peace and Justice, Memoirs of an Activist Intellectual, published by University of Tennessee Press. Now, the right wing would immediately accuse Professor Whitner of being a peacenik. You remember that word? That's a word from before you were born. A peacenik, a hippie, an academic ivory tower, arrogant, snotty, know-it-all. Right? Of course they would. Just so you might like, I wanted to get to that a couple of weeks ago when those numbers first came out, but I mean, there's no surprise there. There's no surprise at all. You know, what was the infamous bumper sticker? Yeah, bumper sticker. From a few decades back, you can't, or, I think it was something that Einstein or Schweitzer or somebody said about you cannot simultaneously prepare for and try to avoid war, nuclear conflict. I don't know, somebody will get the right quote for me. I am absolutely sure. So, no surprise, the numbers from SIPRI, that more was spent in 2011 on war and preparation for war than any time in human history. I mean, that, well, sure, I mean, that's not like newsflash! Of course. A couple of countries, I think, in Europe have had about enough. The Greeks and the French. You heard about this? Yeah, of course you did. Over the weekend, you pay attention? The French voted out Sarkozy and voted in a socialist. Oh, no. And the Greeks. the Greeks. Well, the Greeks have decided that they are not interested in the center-right New Democratic Party. As a matter of fact, that faction trying to run Greece right now announced today that it has failed to form a governing majority. So, the Greek election and the political chaos since that election has shown that it's not clear how the Greeks can survive within the Eurozone over the longer term. The whole idea, the whole idea of the euro, I think, was Germany's way of getting back for a second defeat at the hands of the rest of Europe and the United States. The Germans decided, well, look, there's a better way to do this. We don't have to invade Poland. We don't have to pick a minority and try to annihilate them. Let's come up with a European currency, and then, well, now here's what we'll do. We'll get together, and while we're doing that, let's get in. This hour has been sponsored by John Zweig. Thank you very much, John. The Greeks have had enough. The Greeks have had enough. According to those who know, like the chief economist at High Frequency Economics, a financial research group in Valhalla, New York, Greeks is lurking as a problem, not so much because it could leave the euro and tear things apart, but because it could, before that, default and trigger financial events that could cause the crisis to spread. Doon, 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 doon. Did you hear the news today? They were warning that a Greek default would affect your 401k. A Greek default will affect your 401k. And so with the election of the French socialist. Oh, no. Let's not let that happen. I mean, if people are starving and losing everything in Greece and Spain and Ireland and this place and that place, oh, for God's sake, it's going to affect your 401k. Woo! Talk about self-centeredness. Talk about toxic, narcissistic bullcrap. Oh, no! A spokesman for the French military said that about a fourth of French troops were on course to leave Afghanistan by the end of this year. But, they are awaiting word on whether the new French president would speed up their withdrawal. President-elect François Hollande of France has said during the election campaign that he would withdraw all French combat troops from Afghanistan by the end of 2012. My goodness. That would certainly make sense, wouldn't it? I mean, nobody, no nation, no empire, no leader, no military, no nothing has ever gone into Afghanistan and taken control. And we are not going to either. Not today, not in 2024, not in 2012, never, never, ever. It's never been done, and we are not going to do it. What we are going to do is continue to sow death and destruction in Afghanistan, ours and theirs. This makes wonderful sense, doesn't it? Of course, Obama knows that if he were to do the Christian thing, the rational thing, the logical thing, the humanistic thing, he would order every single troop out of there. But he also knows that if he did that, these filthy, stinking, salivating right-wingers would start screaming, "Who lost Afghanistan?" Well, Kublai Khan, or was it, no, Genghis Khan lost, Alexander the Great, the British twice, the Russians, the Soviets. At a news conference today at NATO headquarters in Kabul, a NATO spokesman, Dominique Medley, referred to an agreement that the departing French President Nicolas Sarkozy signed with President Hamid Karzai of Afghanistan this year. Mr. Medley said, quote, "France is a very strong partner of Afghanistan and the Afghan people, with a very long history here and a long commitment to the future, already signed in their strategic partnership agreement for after 2014. Oh, yeah? Well, that was somebody different. That wasn't Monsieur Hollande, the new prime minister, or president, excuse me, the president. Well, so you have a relatively stable country financially, France, and a relatively unstable country, Greece. Both of them saying that exactly what Paul Krugman has been saying. As a matter of fact, if you read Krugman's column today in the New York Times, he goes into this, the election of the socialist François Hollande and the Greek debt crisis, and how both of these events are the result of the phony-ass international banker crush that has been put on all of Europe and the United States. Get rid of debt. Cut all sorts of social programs. Keep building up the military. Cut all sorts of social programs. Cut everything. Education, healthcare, Meals on Wheels, after school this, before school that, Medicaid, Medicare, CHIPS, cut everything. In order to satisfy these rancid sons of bitches who all ought to be taken to the public square and shoom, just like they did in France. all those years ago. That's one way to stop the madness, isn't it? Another way is through the electoral process, but how many countries still have elections that are meaningful? Well, parliamentary systems still do. But in this country, what do we do here? We are going to continue to follow a policy that is pushing us slowly back into another recession. Just like the UK is about to enter its second recession before it even comes out of the first. Greece is on the verge of bankruptcy. Ireland is about ready to give the middle finger to all the rest of Europe because they have tried and tried and tried, and they still can't satisfy the international bankers. France? Well, they just said, screw you, and elected a socialist. Spain? Italy? All right, we're going to open up the phones. When we come back, we'll take your calls if you want to chat. 877-996-2556. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Think of this. It is 7 past the hour. Yeah, it was Einstein who said you cannot simultaneously prevent and prepare for war. Our crack research department got that for me. Thanks, Reg. One of the members of our crack research department. They are legion. So it was Einstein. And Bruce Enberg, regarding the military-industrial complex, emailed in, it's easy to miss the real problem with the military-industrial complex. It's not the military so much. They do what they're told with what they're given. It's not even the industry part, really. It's the few very, very rich people who make it a complex. In Eisenhower's original draft of his speech, he included Congress with military-industrial complex. It's the complex people who corrupt congressmen and pay off generals with seven-figure retirement jobs to push their agendas in the press. They push through the production of planes and ships we don't need that often don't even work. They start wars we don't need to be in to make even more money. We spend trillions so that they can skim off many billions in the process. We could just give them the billions like they were our royal family and keep the rest, but the peasants might catch on. During World War II, the major contractors, the major military contractors, were expected to lose money. People went to prison for making a profit from the war. That's why the war was over so quickly, and we started to disarm. Republicans fixed that by ginning up fear of the Soviets. Eisenhower warned us, but nobody listened. Yeah, some of you may remember from your lives or from hearing your parents talk about it or from your history book the term war profiteering. Oh, that sounds so quaint. I wonder if Dick Cheney... Oh, never mind. What the hell am I mentioning him for? Goddamn ghoul. He ate somebody's heart a couple of months ago. What's next? I'm going to eat somebody's brain? This hour is being sponsored by Maggie Hittinger. She writes, her message is support Mike Malloy. Buy Dr. Judy Wood's book on the real reasons the towers went down. Dr. Judy Wood tries to explain it. But the more we try to understand it, the more strange it becomes. You can get it at book@wheredidthetowersgo.com. book@wheredidthetowersgo.com. Or just go wheredidthetowersgo.com. Dr. Judy Wood. I'm not familiar with that one. Thank you, Maggie. I appreciate the sponsorship. All right. As promised, let's go to the phones. Mark Taylor Canfield, Occupy Seattle, joins us. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Mike. It's good to talk to you again.
Absolutely.
You have no idea how thrilled I am that folks in the U.S. are finally talking about these so-called austerity measures, because I believe that's the real reason that a lot of people all over the world are rising up, including the reason that the Occupy Wall Street movement started.
Sure.
People remember the folks in Egypt had no jobs and couldn't afford food.
Right.
And if you start looking at it and see where it goes, it starts at the very, very top. And although I'm not much of a conspiracy theorist, Mike, if you follow where these cuts in social programs and education are coming from, it goes right back to the IMF, the World Bank, and the World Trade Organization, which is why 100,000 people took to the streets here in Seattle and shut down the WTO conference 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So this is an ongoing attack on the majority of the world's population and basically all its species that started with the IMF and the World Bank invasions of the economic and government systems in Bolivia, Mexico, and a lot of other non-G8 members back in the 1980s and 90s. Now, we've seen it taking over the government policies in the Eurozone, starting with Ireland and now Greece, and with their eyes on Spain, Portugal, and Italy. But here in the United States, we are getting the same treatment from our own city governments, from our own state governments, and from our own federal government. So now, this corporate globalist plan to push these austerity measures all over the world is finally in force. We're seeing it in our own neighborhoods with the increase in homelessness and the lack of affordability of any kind of housing or government services.
Let me ask you, Mark, let me ask you, how long do you think it'll take Americans to put all these pieces together? The Europeans, of course, are way ahead of us. I think we're going to see country after country. First of all, I think the euro is dead. The idea of the eurozone is dead. That's the reason these countries are going bankrupt, because they can't bail themselves out. They have to work with the currency that really is a foreign currency they have no control over. But how soon do you think Americans will start to catch on that we are not going to recover until this crazy balance of budget austerity crap, the stuff Paul Krugman's been talking about for 3 years now, stops?
First of all, we have to ask ourselves, who are we bailing out? Okay, obviously it's not the middle class and the poor, so
we need
to start there. Number two, there was a 2-page article in the Sunday Seattle Times totally highlighting the fact that the middle class is moving more and more in support of the Occupy Wall Street movement and away from traditional progressive and independent political parties and movements. So we know that if you look at Greece and you look at all of the countries, you know, in France right now, and you look at happen in this country, I think that it's inevitable that people are going to be moving to the left, because they're going to see that that's the only way they're going to be able to protect their interests at this point. Anybody who stands up for the 1% right now is just ridiculous.
It's come down to that's why I'm curious how long it'll take Americans to wake up. It's very difficult for Americans after the brainwashing that's been going on in this country for about the past 80 years. It's very difficult for Americans to understand that right-wing solutions are really all about death and destruction and termination of people's futures, and that the only way to get out of this is to move to the left, move to the Democratic left, where solutions are just sitting there waiting. There are no solutions on the right for all except that 1% or the 0.1%, the real elites. And I'm curious. I've been curious about this for 20 years, and I'm still curious. When are people going to wake up and stop voting against their own economic self-interest? But it's more than that now. When are people going to wake up and realize the scam that's been pulled, and the only way to get out of it is move to the left?
We might be seeing it right now, Mike, because I've been, you know, asking myself that same question. And I think once people realize that the political system is rigged and that their government is controlled by corporations, whether you're on the left, the right, the middle, wherever you're at, mm-hmm. you realize that there's only one place to go at that point, and that's to the streets. And that's why people are supporting the Occupy Wall Street movement. And because the austerity measures are now in our own neighborhoods that have come home to roost for all Americans, this might be the turning point where people finally realize that, you know, the two-state party with the duopoly, you know, conservative and liberals in Washington, D.C. are not really representing them.
Right.
And in order to get representation, people are going to have to demand it, because it's not going to come easily from people who have already been bought out by billions of dollars and paying finance money and free money.
That's true. Mark, thank you. I'm glad you had the answers tonight.
I think people are moving to the left right now, Mike. I've never seen the middle class so supportive of people being out in the streets and camping out in parks just to stand up for the 99%. And I don't think that the corporate media or the right wing has been able to divide it the way that they'd like people to think, and that people are in solidarity all over the world. So this is just a natural result, you know, them squeezing so hard that people are tired of it and they're done. They are not going to vote for the same kind of candidates anymore. And if they do, then, you know, they're responsible for being stuck with the same system.
That's very true. Mark, thank you so much. Thanks for checking in. I appreciate what you had to say. We'll chat again. Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Listening on XM driving in North Carolina. Hello, Jim.
Hey, Mike. I've listened to your show for a long time and think you do a great job, so I appreciate that. You're very provocative, which is excellent.
Well, thanks.
Hey, I don't like the Democrats. Before I start with anything else, I don't like that the Democrat logo is a donkey. The thing looks cowardly, or just it doesn't look like it wants to fight, and I want to fight.
Yeah, I hear
you.
So
we need to change our mascot. We can make the Republicans be the little ankle-biting dog or something like that, and we'll pick something else for us.
I would like that. How about a saber-toothed tiger?
Yeah, perhaps. Yeah.
I mean for the Democrats.
Yeah, maybe.
No?
Except for I'm vegetarian, so I don't know if I want something that's going to...
Okay, how
I don't
about,
know if I want a carnivore or a... But
how about a huge turtle? Well, no, wait. They eat fish.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of an animal that is, how about an, the Republicans have a giraffe?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, I like the elephant actually a lot. I've always liked elephants, and they've got it. Maybe we just need to flip them around. We can be the elephant, they can be the ankle biter, something like that. I don't.
That'll work, Jim. That'll work. That's not why you really called, though, I know.
No, I've gone to the Occupy Charlotte. First, you know, this is funny, too. I want to say this. You know, the people have a bad image of the Occupy people, but my wife and I make pretty good money driving a truck because they can't outsource our job.
Right.
I went into the bank the other day and said, I'm an occupier, and I want to pay off our house. And I did. We paid off our house early. So I had everybody looking like, what?
you're supposed to be an unwashed hippie.
Exactly. Well, I came in and I changed the oil. I do our own maintenance. I grease the truck, so I grease on my shirt. Oil, black duck, diesel kind of oil spots on my tennis shoes. Walking into a, well, it used to be First Union, then it was Wachovia, now right. It's Wells Fargo.
Right.
It was funny, though. Everybody in the bank was looking at this and getting quite a comedy routine out of it, I think.
I'll bet they were.
But here's the deal. I've gone to the Occupy Charlotte and even spoke, you know, and I realized how much the news, they like to focus, kind of like you hinted at, they like to only show the kind of the fringe, you know, that kind of looks crazy.
Right.
They just wanted to, even our own News 14 Carolina that I thought was just sort of a news only, kind of a neutral thing, they're not. They only showed the goofball looking, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I went there and I began to think, what, you know, this is good, but what can we do to really start attacking the issue, which in my opinion, you know, truck driving used to be one of the lower ranking jobs, and because of outsourcing, and you can outsource it, it is now actually, I think it's number 5 in terms of, you know, money you can make per hour or something like that.
I didn't know that.
So check this out. Let's redefine entitlements, because I despise Paul Ryan like you do, you know, and his, you know, anti-entitlement, we pay, people pay for Social Security and they like to call that an entitlement, which is, that alone is disgusting. But here's the real problem that would help, you know, Occupy people wouldn't even be there were it not for our trade policies. So let's redefine entitlements as outsourcing as an entitlement. You know, let's define entitlements as like corporate entitlements, like outsourcing, unregulated outsourcing, where we have to compete with China's. You know, I actually looked up the U.S. Department of Labor keeps track of the wages in other countries, and the most current statistic on China is $1.40 an hour U.S. We don't have to allow. We the people don't have to allow that, you know. And even the Democrats, I've talked to our Senator Hagan and our Mayor Fox that's bringing the convention there, and they don't seem too keen on changing on touching the trade policy. And I think we need to do that. I think we do need to touch it.
Well, you're absolutely right, but the trade policy is not going to change as long as capitalism exists, and that's simply because capitalism is a global system. It has to be. By definition, it cannot be limited to the confines of a geographical area like the United States, like Great Britain, like China. It cannot be simply because capitalism demands it must have, or it dies, ever-expanding markets. The obvious fly in the ointment is that we don't live in an infinite world. So at some point, capitalism starts to reach its tail and starts to devour itself. So I understand perfectly what you're saying, but I think the only way to do it is to dismantle capitalism, to take it apart, replace it with democratic socialism, where a small trucking company is fine. Somebody opens a dentist shop, fine. So, dentist office, somebody starts a textile mill and hires 100 people or 500 people, fine. Go for it. Kind of a early United States mercantilism kind of system. But global capitalism, that's almost a redundancy. Capitalism has to be global or it ceases to exist. So the only thing I can say, Jim, is to me, the only way to fulfill what you're suggesting, and you make perfect sense, is to do away with a capitalist system. I have to leave there. Jim, I hope you call again. I'm glad you called in tonight. Thank you so much. Take care. Drive safe, okay? We'll be right back. Empire's fall. Freedom is merely privilege extended unless enjoyed by one and all. Some brothers and sisters, while the struggle carries on, the international knowledge unites the world in song.
Revolution starts right now. Here's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Maggie Hittinger. And her message, support Mike Malloy, buy Dr. Judy Wood's book on the real reasons the towers went down. Dr. Judy Wood tries to explain it, but the more we try to understand it, the more strange it becomes. You can go to this website, wheredidthetowersgo.com, wheredidthetowersgo.com. And the book itself is, I believe, is book at wheredidthetowersgo.com. Anyway, check out the website. And thank you, Maggie. I appreciate your sponsorship very much. From Michael in Roswell, let me add this about the military-industrial complex. The issue of war profiteering, as Michael writes, was considerably more complex than Bruce suggests. From my research, for most of the war profiteering rules were in place. But there were endless squabbles in Congress on how to administer them, particularly on what formula would war profiteering be determined. The court cases were considerable, and every time some firm was accused of profiteering, it started the squabbling all over again. And even though Truman wanted the rules continued after the war was over, enforcement rather quickly dwindled. That said, Eisenhower never did fully acknowledge his role in the expansion of the military. His first Secretary of Defense, Charles Wilson, that's the guy who famously said during his confirmation hearing that what was good for GM was good for the country and vice versa. Anyway, Wilson actually created the game plan to transform wartime arms manufacturers into continuous suppliers of arms. And Eisenhower never did rein in the growing rabid right-wing influence among his joint chiefs, most of whom had been his junior officers in World War II. Along with that, the leadership of the Air Force, as the new kids on the block, were quite willing to forge virtually corrupt arrangements with arms suppliers in order to cement their budgetary preeminence. And by the late 50s, then, there was a code in the Pentagon for paid trips by defense contractors. They were called 3B conferences, which stood for Beach, Booze, and Broads. Michael and Roswell. Yeah, let's remember where the co-conspirators in Operation Northwoods, where they came from. And if you haven't Wikipedia'd Operation Northwoods, and you want to have some fun reading before you go to bed tonight, do it. And as far as I'm concerned, you will have one more clue into the real perps in the assassination of John Kennedy. But that's just me. You know, I understand. Everybody, even up to and including the recent Kennedy author, Chris Matthews, he also is convinced. I was listening the other day to Matthews' program on Sirius in the car, and he was interviewing the agent and the FBI agent who jumped on the back of the car when Jackie Kennedy was trying to grab a piece of her husband's skull. What was his name? Don't send me his name. It doesn't really matter. The point being that he and Chris Matthews were talking. That guy must be in his mid-80s by now, but he and Chris Matthews were talking about that day, briefly, and they both agreed, Matthews said to the FBI agent, who do you believe was responsible? And of course he said, well, of course it was Lee Harvey Oswald, you know, single bullet theory, right? So, I know, that's Clint Hill, thanks Labor Man, Clint Hill was the agent. But the whole idea, and I think this is what Michael is getting at, if you look at the Joint Chiefs, look at the military command after Eisenhower became president, you'll find people that had worked under him in the chain of command during World War II, and these are the guys that wound up General Curtis LeMay, who was, in my opinion, clinically insane. He was a madman. He wanted war. He wanted nuclear war, and he wasn't the only one. I think so did Douglas MacArthur. He wanted, of course, he was Truman's guy. But I'm just saying. So anyway, ah, One open line, 877-996-2556 here if you want to join in. Jeff is in Montgomery, Alabama. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Mike, greetings from the land where sex toys are illegal, but tea bagging is godly righteous.
Yeah, well, I live next door, pal, so I know.
Oh, yeah. All right. Hey, I want to throw in my two cents here about cutting defense spending. I think alongside that, we need to cut spending into militarizing our police as well.
Yeah, that's getting pretty intense, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, basically, this whole SWAT team concept was actually conceived from some small community in California where the United Farm Workers were having a sit-in. They were protesting. So they had decided to start some sort of SWAT team, just basically act like a bunch of thugs on these poor protesters.
Oh, I didn't know that. It started with Cesar Chavez with the United Farm Workers,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, he was there when that happened.
Well, I'll be damned.
And then the LAPD decided to base their SWAT team on that incident.
Well, you know, I had the mistaken belief that it's that the SWAT idea, special weapons and tactics, began when the Black Panther Defense Organization put itself together and decided to test the Second Amendment and actually carry rifles and shotguns onto the streets as the Constitution guaranteed them the right to do. And, of course, the mostly at the time white police forces went nuts and came up with the SWAT teams. But you say it's from United Farm Workers. They were almost as radical as the Panthers.
Well, probably according to some right-wing douchebags, they probably were dangerous. I don't know about them. You know, I think the right wing of this country is probably suffering from all the lead poisoning from sexually handling all those bullets, you know?
Jeff, you're in fine form tonight. Listen, thanks. I appreciate what you had to say. Take care. Yeah, Jeff's right. Militarization of police force. We already have more people locked up as a raw number. I believe this is true as a raw number, but certainly we have more people locked up as a percentage of our population than any place on earth. More so than Red China, more so than Russia, more so than Iran, more so than, pick a dictatorship. And the truth is, or the sad fact is, that hundreds of thousands of people are locked into these situations because of nonviolent drug crimes. Now, you may disagree and say, well, if it's a crime, it's not violent, or it has to be violent of some sort. Maybe it's just violence against the law, to which I say hogs not. But so many people are locked up because we now have not only the military-industrial complex, we now have the prison-industrial complex. You know about this. Everybody knows about this. This is not news. 2.5 million people in prison, plus another, 4 or 5 million on parole or probation that are being monitored by the courts, that are underfunded and understaffed because the Republicans even cut that. So it's just a form of madness here. The militarization of police, though, is, you know, it's gone way beyond special weapons and tactics. It's now to the point where you're dealing with who were the troopers, Kathy, in Star Wars? Not the Jedi Knights, but the guys in the white, the stormtroopers. That's all they were called? Was the stormtroopers? Oh, what do I know? I never really. Thanks, James. Stormtroopers. Okay. but that's what they're starting to look like. And, again, the last demonstration I was at where this police presence was obvious was at a Bradley Manning support rally at Quantico. When was that? About a year ago, I guess. And the Virginia State Police, for God's sake, there were scores of them that started marching on us demonstrators. And they were, right face to face, only the stormtroopers had no faces. there we were, totally vulnerable, standing there in jackets and sneakers, and here come these guys looking like, I don't know, the stormtroopers. But they had the visors over there, everything in black. Black gloves, black shields, black boots, black pants, black bulletproof vests, black armor, black helmets, black, you know, the black face shields, black everything. God. So you could not look eye to eye with these cops. It's like dealing with robots, militarized force of robots. Scary. You know, it's not going to jail that's scary, although it probably should be. It's not that. It's dealing with these robots. We'll be right back.
Well, I can't believe I've seen the day when all our rights will be taken away. Would you have guessed that a little collie weed could ever bring all these vultures in a bee? What it feels like we're living in a police state. You broke the law, so accept your fate.
Sponsored by Maggie Hittinger. Thanks, Maggie. Her message is support Mike Malloy. She also wants you to take a look at Dr. Judy Wood's book on the real reason the towers went down. You can find this at wheredidthetowersgo.com. Wheredidthetowersgo.com. And Maggie says that Dr. Wood tries to explain it, but the more we try to understand it, the more strange it becomes. All right, thanks, Maggie. I hope people go and check out that book, and thanks very much for the sponsorship. We do appreciate it. Oh, yeah, coming up next hour, let me see a show of hands. How many folks know who, or the website Natural News, is it .com? Naturalnews.com? Yeah, I think it is. Natural News, yeah, naturalnews.com. One of my listeners sent, forwarded to me an email newsletter from naturalnews.com that he or she, sorry, Eclectic, I don't know your gender, but an email that he or she had received. And it's a topic we've covered a couple of times, but we're going to cover it again next hour. Okay? Tom is in San Francisco listening online. Hello, Tom.
Hi, good day.
Hey, speak up a little bit louder, Tom.
Okay, I'm sorry.
There you go.
Let me speak up.
There you go.
there's just something I noticed because this has been talked about on various programs. But the thing I noticed about the French and the Greek voting,
yeah,
they seem to be voting on paper ballots that need to be hand-counted. No cheating. Mm-hmm. No machine.
Right.
And I think that this is the reason you're seeing this result. In this country, I'm not so sure. You know, Harry drops 2004 challenge.
Right.
You know, and all that stuff. I go, my goodness gracious, what the heck can we do?
Well, I agree. What can we do? What do you say?
You know, the state of California, the Catherine Bowen, I believe is her name, she decertified a whole bunch of Diebold machines.
Right.
And but still we're doing machine voting. We're still doing the optical scans. But they're huge paper ballots if you demand a recount. But you imagine it, if you engineer a vote to go just 1 or 2% your way, then, you know, what would be the point of the challenge?
Mm-hmm.
Or that's what would be leveled at you.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the problem. This is the first assault on our constitutional rights.
Yeah, and you know, it goes hand in glove with that is the active discouragement, if not outright making illegal populations that otherwise would be voting. How do you make them illegal? You tell them that they must have photo ID. What if they can't get photo ID? Their registration card doesn't work anymore?
You know, you tell me you have to have a birth certificate.
Right.
I don't have a birth certificate in my hands. I have to go and get a copy of it.
Right.
This to me is
awful.
I hate these capitalists. I hate them.
I do too, Tom. I mean,
when I see a thing that came from the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal talking about the average American, I saw this in Bill Moyers. The average American makes a little over $45,000 a year. The average CEO of a company makes about $14 million a year.
Right.
The average hedge fund manager, what do they do that's useful to anybody? I'd like to put them in an undercover boss situation on CBS. Here, greet people at Walmart, Mr. Bernanke.
Right.
You know, no. Do it. And by the way, go find a hotel room to live in.
Right. Oh, God.
Anyway, take care.
All right, Tom, thanks. I appreciate what you had to say. We never did get to the elections in France or Greece, but thanks, Tom. Kevin in Colorado Springs. Got about a minute and a half, Kevin. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I was going to talk about that, too, the elections.
Uh-huh.
I'm pretty proud of the French and Greeks for what they did. And you asked just a minute ago, what can we do? And it goes back to grassroots protesting. And if there appears to be mistakes in the ballot, we protest.
Mm-hmm.
And we protest and we start protesting to go back to a paper ballot that you put an X on. But, you know, everybody, you said you think Obama's going to win this election mm-hmm. handily.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are saying that. So if Romney did win, wouldn't that make you take pause as to what happened? And that's where it's got to start. Unfortunately, people... though there's people like Brad Friedman that are doing it, it really hasn't taken off to where great crowds of people are protesting to go back to the old
right.
paper ballot.
And that's after we had two stolen elections in 2000 and 2004. There is no question that the 2008 election was tampered with. The 2010 elections were tampered with. Again, Kevin, I don't know why the American public doesn't connect to that, except for the fact that mainstream media refer to charges of vote tampering as they just laugh it off. It's called election fraud. That's the meme. That's the name the right wing has given it. It's not election fraud. It is election fraud. It's not voter fraud. The voters aren't doing anything except trying to vote. I got to leave there. Thanks, Kevin. I appreciate what you had to say. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy. back. So here it is. This comes under the heading of Yay, Atheists. Huh? Some studies from research from the University of California, Berkeley. And these studies were published in a recent edition of the journal Social, Psychological, and Personality Science. Ooh. And the studies conclude, or the research, I should say, concludes that, you know this, highly religious people are less motivated by compassion than atheists. Or agnostics, or less religious people. The research found a stronger link between compassion and generosity among non-religious or less religious people than the so-called Bible beaters. And that's understandable. Evangelicals, for the most part, are not involved or not into compassion, or they're just not. They're into doctrine. UC Berkeley social psychologist and co-author of the study, Rob Willer, explained, quote, "Overall, we find that for less religious people, the strength of their emotional connection to another person is critical to whether they will help that person or not. The more religious, on the other hand, may ground their generosity less in emotion and more in other factors such as doctrine, a communal identity, or reputational concerns." Well, there you go. Doctrine. I don't remember Jesus talking about doctrine, at least not that I read in the Bible. Communal identity. The only time I think he really got involved in talking about that was when he condemned the Pharisees and so on and so forth. Or reputational concerns. I guess that means if somebody has a bad reputation, good Christians shy away. You know, evangelical Christians shy away. Whereas Jesus surrounded himself with the dead, the dying, the sick, the whores. That was, you know, his people. I know it's not Wednesday, but I just found this interesting. The lead author of this research said she became interested in this topic after an atheist friend said he had only donated money for earthquake relief in Haiti after watching a video of a woman being pulled from the rubble. And she said, Laura Saslow, the lead author, said, I was interested to find that this experience, an atheist being strongly influenced by his emotions to show generosity to strangers, was replicated in three large systematic studies. Uh-huh. Now, in one experiment, researchers analyzed a 2004 survey of 1,300 American adults to find that non-believers and the less religious were more likely to participate in random acts of kindness, like giving food or money to a homeless person. The study revealed, quote, "These findings indicate that although compassion is associated with pro-sociality among both less religious and more religious individuals, the relationship is particularly robust for less religious individuals." Ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da! So yay, atheists and you agnostics and who haven't really made up your minds yet. And even some of you who are believers, but, yeah, you know, like cafeteria Catholics, I guess, maybe you would qualify. But I think it's clear. Most evangelical Christians have a very strong sense of punishment and reward, right? It's all about punishment and reward. If you are good, you get a reward. If you are bad, you really get punished. And it's all about that. So I guess if you extrapolate from that basic idea, if you say you tithe 10% to some religious organization, to go to 10.5% would really kind of be, you don't have to do that. You know, well, I've already given. I gave it the office. You know, that kind of thing. I think the whole thing sucks. Forget it. What else? Another one of my favorite. Oh, yeah. A Republican Missouri House member who previously served in the U.S. Air Force, publicly announced last Wednesday that he is gay and called upon Republican leaders in the Missouri legislature to withdraw a bill that would limit discussion of sexual orientation in public schools. See, thought control, language control. Who'd have thought it would have come? Well, of course it'd come about sexuality. But anyway, Representative Zachary Wyatt, he's a 27-year-old cattle farmer from the rural northern Missouri town of Novinger. He said the legislation had motivated him to disclose his sexual orientation publicly for the first time. He was joined by 9 other Democratic and Republican lawmakers in denouncing Missouri legislation that would prohibit teaching extracurricular activities or materials that discuss sexual orientation, unless they relate to the scientific facts about human reproduction. Human reproduction. Oh, okay. I wonder if that will explain that, yes, lesbian women can be moms, and yes, gay men can be fathers. Normally and naturally. Probably not. Mr. Wyatt said, or Representative Wyatt said, quote, "I will not lie to myself anymore about my own sexuality. I am still the same person that I was when I woke up this morning, and I will be the same person when I go to bed tonight. Today, I ask you to stand with me as a proud Republican, oh, please, a proud veteran, and a proud gay man who wants to protect all kids addressing bullying in our schools." Oh, so that's what it is. The bill would prohibit telling the little kiddies in elementary and middle school you cannot bully someone because you think their sexual orientation may be somewhat different from your own. I see. Well, this guy's very young. He's 27. He says he's a proud Republican. I don't know how you do that. A proud Republican. Oh well. I'll take his word for it. He's not running for re-election, by the way, because he plans to move to Hawaii and study marine biology. Well, good for you. Now, a spokesman for the Gay and Lesbian Victory Fund, that's a national group that backs gay, lesbian, bisexual, transsexual candidates. This group said that Wyatt is the only openly gay Republican in the nation who is currently serving in a state legislature. What? That's not true. Don't we here in Georgia, Kathy, don't we have at least one woman who is openly homosexual serving in the legislature? I thought we did. Okay, I'll take the author's word for it here. It says other gay Republicans. Oh, I see. Openly gay Republican. I'm sorry. Yes, we have Democrats who are openly gay. What is it about being Republican and gay that just puts you in a situation where, I mean, you can't. And log cabin Republicans, what is up with that? What is up with that? How can you be a gay man, a lesbian woman, and be a Republican? This is like, how can you be Jewish and support Christian fundamentalism? In all three instances, if you are a Jew, if you're a gay man or a lesbian woman, in all three instances, the Christian fundamentalists want to destroy you. They want to make you just disappear. You're in the way. You're something, I don't know. All right, well, you can see this is going to be a fun hour. Stick around. We'll be right back. You can't love who you want to love in times like these. Homophobia, the worst disease. You can't love who you want to love in times like these. The siren of the ambulance, the deadpan of the cops, shot to mark the outline where the boy first dropped. Beware the Holy Trinity, church and state and law. For every death the virus gets more deadly than before. Homophobia, the worst disease. You can't love who you want to love in times like these. Homophobia, the worst disease. You can't love who you want to love in times like these.
nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. This Republican right-wing evangelical Christian-led attack against women, against stopping bullying, against gay folk, against people of color, against poor people. What the hell is going on with you? Why are you doing this? I mean, there's some really serious issues to deal with that I'm going to talk about here in a minute. But this bill in Missouri, the consideration of which caused this Republican Missouri House member, Zachary Wyatt, to come out and say, yeah, I'm gay. It is being called the Don't Say Gay bill. As a matter of fact, Stephen Colbert recently made fun of it, if that's the right word, right term, on his cable TV show. But it's called the Don't Say Gay bill. People who are opposed to passing this damn thing. Opponents say it could forbid teachers from uttering the word gay or lesbian in the classroom or talking about bullying. The specific bullying that gay and lesbian students face from other kids. I mean, this is really madness. I mean, who comes up with this? I know. Let's not ban bullying. Let's ban words. I mean, that's madness. That is so right wing. That is so Republican. That is so conservative. That's the way you do it. That's the way fascism works too. This is how it works. The legislation also would forbid school-sponsored groups that try to work out these problems, so-called gay-straight alliance groups. Not going to have any of that. You can't hang out with those black kids. I mean those gay kids. God. The Republican, Zachary Wyatt, was joined by, two other members of the Missouri House, both Democrats from urban areas, are openly homosexual. And one Democratic Missouri State Senator is also openly lesbian. Anyway, all these folks got together and asked the sponsor of this bill to withdraw it. You know, come on, for Christ's sake. You're going to pass a law that says you can't talk about bullying of gay and lesbian students? You can't even say the words gay and lesbian unless it's in the context of reproduction? What the hell is this? This is the Soviet Union? This is Red China, to use a couple of terms from the 50s. You like that? Red China! Soviet Union! Is this totalitarianism? Of course, it's Christianity. Representative Steve Cookson, the guy who introduced it, said he's not going to withdraw it. He is a Republican from the rural southern Missouri town of Fair Dealing. How's that for irony? He comes from Fair Dealing, Missouri. He said he believes parents and family members should teach children about different kinds of sexuality. No, you don't, you lying little snake. No, you don't either. But this is a typical kind of so-called Christian hypocrisy that is so galling. It's so sickening. So sickening. Mr. Cookson says his bill does not explicitly ban the mention of specific words. No, not at all. There's no such word as gay. There's no such word as lesbian. So therefore, how could my bill ban words that don't exist? Those words are made up words. Those aren't real words. There's only Jesus. And words like that. There's no such word as gay. There's no such word as lesbian. I'm not initiating legislation to stop people from using real words, but those aren't real words. G-A-Y. What does that spell? That's not a word. L-E-S-B-I-A-N. What is that? You can't even pronounce it. Those aren't words. Mr. Cookson insists. He did not say whether he intends to ban school-sponsored gay-straight alliance groups. What are those? There's no such thing. Gay-straight? I know the word straight. That's a line that's straight. Can you imagine now if this passes in Missouri schools? Don we now our blank apparel, fa-la-la-la-la-la. Of course, that's not a Christian song anyway. That's very pagan. Deck the Halls is totally pagan. Has no reference to Jesus in there at all. But would he do that? Would he say, you know, you can't say the word gay in that song. Gay apparel, what's that? There's no such word as gay. What is that? Feather boas, maybe? I don't know. Madness. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Stick something in that kid's mouth, will you?
And be the best to squish your butt. And all the whole wide world, I'll be a cowboy.
Okay, please, really, seriously.
I'll work for Jesus all my days.
Send him outside to play.
And on the prairie,
just keep him away from priests. All right. all right, it's time for that part of the program now where everything gets very serious and very dark and scary on the one hand. On the other hand, I have discovered that I have a certain cadre of listeners with whom I sometimes agree, sometimes I don't agree, which is, you know, pretty normal. But whose resistance to the horror at Fukushima is beyond my ability to understand. I see what happened at Daiichi nuclear reactor complex there in Fukushima, Japan, as an event that has the potential to cause catastrophic disruption in the life cycle of just about everything on Earth. And apparently, I've gotten a couple of emails from people who are saying, you know, you're being an alarmist. You're being way too concerned about this. This stuff is not this. This stuff is not that. The reactor is not over there, it's not over here, you know, the breakage or the meltdown or the water or the and okay, I mean, that certainly is open for debate. The problem is none of us have firsthand information. It's kind of like Chernobyl. It's kind of like Three Mile Island. The government's involved, although Carter was pretty open about it. I think Jimmy Carter even went to Three Mile Island, didn't he? But governments, of course, have an interest in lying, especially in a catastrophe like what happened at Fukushima. Now, of course, it's not man-made. We can't blame the Japanese for screwing up, except for where they built these the string of reactors. I guess we could fault them for that. As far as Chernobyl, that was, I think, human-caused. As far as Three Mile Island, that was, I think, human-caused. There was no natural disaster in the first two. No earthquake, no tsunami, no hurricane, no tornado. So I've noticed over the past couple of weeks, though, a couple of months, that when I bring up this topic, either it's real off-putting and people will click off and just not want to hear this, and I'll get emails to that effect, or people will say, you know, you're being an alarmist about this. I hope that's the case. I hope that it's just another one of those stories you hear about, you know, like an asteroid is coming. Oops, no, it's not. Planet X is it? Oops, no, it's not. I hope that's what this is. But from one of our listeners, I got this today. It's for the people who read Natural News, naturalnews.com. You familiar with them? Naturalnews.com. And it's an email from that's making the rounds. The email is being distributed by WebSeed. I'm not familiar with that. But anyway, this is what the author at naturalnews.com has to say. He says, Dear Natural News readers, I'm interrupting our normal email schedule to bring you an urgent alert that makes everything else seem insignificant by comparison. The issues of GMOs, fluoride, food freedom, vaccines won't matter at all if we don't solve this far bigger issue that threatens human civilization. Fukushima reactor number 4. Now, that's his words. It threatens human civilization. So I read that and I think, oh, the naturalnews.com. Okay, they have some ideas and beliefs that I do not disagree, that I do not agree with completely. I mean, I understand evangelism even in the area of natural food, the natural world. I get that. I understand that there are going to be certain issues where, for example, vaccines. I'm totally in favor of vaccines. And I know that there are a lot of very intelligent people who are totally against vaccines. Okay. What I go on is having been a parent, having kids and grandkids, and knowing that my children are protected, and that every time that they some epidemic breaks out, they don't get it. They haven't suffered. Blah, blah. You know, I don't want to get way into that. Just like the issue of vaccines causing or being a contributing factor to autism. To me, it was just nonsense, just total nonsense. But that's just to me. I understand that there are some very smart people on the other side of that issue who do not make those kinds of statements like I make. That's nonsense. You know, I don't know. I don't want to get into that either. But back to this, Natural News. The issue that threatens human civilization, Fukushima reactor number 4. And the writer goes on to say, right now the reactor's spent fuel pool is just one earthquake away from a structural failure that could set off a chain of events leading to the release of anywhere from 10 to 85 times the cesium-137 released in the Chernobyl disaster. Such circumstances, the writer says, causes one of Japan's former ambassadors to make the following extraordinary statement. This is from Mitsui Murata, former Japanese ambassador to Switzerland and Senegal, executive director of the Japan Society for Global System and Ethics. He says, quote, "It is no exaggeration to say that the fate of Japan and the whole world depends on number 4 reactor," end quote. Okay, so let me digress from naturalnews.com. Is that, I mean... You know, you and I, we don't know this guy. We don't know Mr. Murata. We don't know, I don't know anything about the Japan Society for Global Systems and Ethics, do you? But there's the statement tossed out. He looks like he's credentialed. He was a former ambassador. He says, quote, "It is no exaggeration to say that the fate of Japan and the whole world depends on number 4 reactor," end quote. Now, back to Natural News writer who's writing this. He writes, or she writes, "A failure of the reactor and the subsequent catastrophic release of cesium-137 would decimate and he has that or she has that in italics, would decimate human life across North America, killing off crops, polluting groundwater, causing widespread infant stillbirths, and unleashing an explosion in cancer rates. North America could become uninhabitable by humans for centuries. Okay, let me digress again. Is that an exaggeration? Is that, radioactivity scares the hell out of me. I guess because, no pun intended, I was exposed to the dangers of radiation from a kid. You know, I grew up in that era, duck and cover. And I know. They said, all you have to do is duck and cover and you'll be okay. No, none of us believed that. You know, at least not the kids I hung out with when I was a kid. We knew. The duck and cover was nonsense. The little turtle walking around, duck and cover, that was nonsense. We knew it. We knew it when we were kids. But what it did do, it inculcated in me and most of the people of my generation, almost unconscious fear now. It's just a subconscious, there's a level of reality inside a lot of us in the so-called baby boom generation, knowing that nuclear annihilation is hanging. I think that's one of the reasons so many people in our cohort, our age group, are such religious nutcases. You know. On the one hand, utter and absolute nuclear disaster. On the other hand, ooh, there's a way out. Bing! Rapture up to heaven. But I digress again. So who knows? North America could become uninhabitable by humans for centuries. Now, I know a couple of people listening to this program already are sending me emails telling me this is nonsense. Is it? So the writer goes on, cesium-137 has a half-life of 30 years, meaning that if North America is blanketed with a layer of radioactive dust in 2012, that radioactivity will still be half as strong in the year 2042. It will drop by half again by the year 2072, and by the year 2102, it might be low enough to where humans could start to recolonize the continent, but even then, rates of cancer and birth defects would likely be off the charts. Really? Now, I understand what a half-life is. I understand, nuclear deterioration, decay is the word I'm looking for. I mean, I get that a little bit. You know, I had physics when I was in high school. I get that. But I don't know. Oh, wait a minute. We hear. What's this? What is this?
Federal authorities would have broadcast the following pre-recorded announcement.
Dum-dum, little dum-dum, little dum-dum, little dum-dum. There was a turtle by the name of Bert, and Bert the turtle was very alert. When danger threatened him, he never got hurt. He knew just what to do. He ducked and covered, ducked and covered.
He did what we all must learn to do.
You and you
and you
and you, duck and cover.
Be sure and remember what Bert the Turtle just did, friends, because every one of us must remember to do the same thing.
Remember what to do, friends. Now tell me right out loud, what are you supposed to do when you see the flash?
It's kind of a dilemma for me, in a sense, about how to deal with this issue. Because to me, it's very, 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 very scary. And to a certain element of our people listening to this program, it's just nonsense. It's something that rational people shouldn't be worried about. Or perhaps even discussing. But... So I'm quoting here from the writer at naturalnews.com. I'm sure you're familiar with that website. And the writer is talking about the what is waiting if Fukushima reactor number 4 cracks or breaks or floods, or not flood, but drains. As the writer puts it, we are one earthquake away from a structural failure that could set off a chain of events that could leave North America uninhabitable for humans for centuries. Really? I mean, that seems pretty out there, doesn't it? But the writer goes on to say, as we speak, the mainstream media are running a total media blackout on this story. Governments are pretending there is no problem. And the corporations that built these nuclear facilities, like General Electric, are quietly running disinformation campaigns to convince everybody there is no problem. Is that really what's going on? The writer says, I'm urging you to share the information, help raise the alarm. Nothing else is important anymore. Now, understand where this is coming from. This is coming from whoever's writing. I don't know if it's a man or a woman, but this is coming from naturalnews.com. And they really take up the cause of certain issues, like genetically altered food or genetically modified food, or fluoride in your drinking water. Fluoridization? Is that how you fluoridization? Slow food. The issue of vaccines. They have a whole list of issues that are central to their philosophy, naturalnews.com does. So when they make a statement like this, nothing else is important anymore. It doesn't matter who is running for president. It doesn't matter what's in the vaccines. It doesn't matter whether GMOs are labeled if our civilization is dead from radiation. Now, is that alarmist? It sure sounds alarmist to me on the one hand. And he's got all that, or she's got all that italicized too, by the way. But maybe it's not alarmist. If somebody who was running around Nazi Germany in 1938 screaming, they're going to kill the Jews! They're going to invade Poland! I mean, how would that person have been labeled? Right? So I don't know. Do you know? Naturalnews.com is shifting our editorial priorities to focus on Fukushima. All other stories, it goes on, are being made secondary to this urgent issue. I'm also recording, the writer says, a Radiation Survival 101 audio program to be included as a downloadable bonus item in my upcoming Preparedness Defense live event happening Tuesday evening. I guess that's tomorrow. Yeah, tomorrow. A small number of seats remain available, and even those will likely be sold out by tonight. Register at healthrangerlive.com. I don't know anything about this stuff. If you are a frequent listener, contributor, or fan of this website, then you know what the writer's talking about. Register at healthrangerlive.com. Okay. The writer goes on to say, I'm assigning coverage of Fukushima to our staff writers and investigators, so I expect to see a lot more reporting on Fukushima until and if this reactor number 4 problem is properly addressed. In the meantime, just one earthquake in Japan could unleash the worst case scenario, sending a massive plume of cesium-137 headed directly toward North America. The fate of our world now rests on the unpredictability of Pacific Rim earthquakes. This is a stupidly risky roll of the dice we've all walked into. And if we don't make it, future archaeologists will one day discover a fine layer of cesium-137 dust followed by a global mass extinction event. Nothing else is important compared to this. We will either solve the Fukushima situation and then eliminate all nuclear power plants on the planet, or we carve our own graves in the sad, pathetic history of an arrogant civilization suicided, quote, quote, by corporate-run science. Pray for our world today. We may have already killed ourselves with stupidity. So what do you think? Send me an email. That's from naturalnews.com. You can go to their website. And the writer has a couple of links to articles that he or she is recommending. Like I say, I don't know. My tendency is to take it all very, 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 very seriously. But, you see? I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.